Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, God bless all you wonderful people out there. We just picked up another very, very dear brother, Mr. Gene Andrews. He's not just a bitter ender. He is the friggin' bitter ender. Like we always say, you know, Lee might have surrendered, but Gene didn't. Gene ain't surrendered yet, and he still has his sword, and he ain't beating no plowshare neither. He sure as hell ain't. But anyway, we're picking him up. We just had a little talk during the break, and so he knows the score. Monica knows the score. I'm the only one that doesn't know. Anyway, I'm going to respond to what Ms. Monica said before we went on the break. Yes, we have absolutely. There should be no doubt in anyone's mind that we have a complete lawless, Satan-worshipping government in control of not only the United States of America, but the entire world right now. What we have is a bunch of drug dealings, Satan worshipers, pedophiles, the absolute drugs of the scum of humanity. They have destroyed our Constitution. They have destroyed our courts. They have been persecuting white people from the get-go. It's getting worse. And Mr. Gene Andrews is coming on in just a minute. I just told you, he told me some time ago that he had a reunion up at Quantico because he was a Marine and he went to Marine officer training up there. Anyway, and if something like over half of the new Marines up there were like Hispanic and black and foreigners. I mean, so if people were still worshiping the military, if you're waiting on those jokers to come rescue you, you're going to get a bayonet in your gut because there's nothing they would love more than to bayonet some white person. And the same military we were talking about has got this clown, this homosexual Millie running the things up there, pushing this perverted LGBT crap in the military. You know, their Black Lives Matter, their critical race theory, pushing that down on our throats, and they're pushing it down a civilian's throat. The same enemy we talked about, Ms. Monica talked about, they own the central bank. They tax us to death. They're bringing in, if it's not good enough for them to have just everything they can get, every non-white person they can get their hands on coming across from South America and Mexico, they're actually flying them in from Haiti now. And they have more rights than we do. And, you know, so, and they're, listen, they run the banks. They're crashing the right now, cryptocurrency's crashing. I mean, they're, and don't pay, I mean, they own the banks. They own the money. There is no such thing as money. Right? They control everything that we do right now. And so my question, my final question, and I know Gene's listening, why would anybody pay allegiance to this stinking Satan-worshipping government? Why would you not resist them in every way you can? Anyway, Gene, that was what me and Miss Monica was talking about. So whenever you get ready, you and Miss Monica can take over. You respond to what we said, and then like we said, Gene's going to cover the General Nathan Bedford Forrest reinterment, him and his wife. We'll do that probably for three-fourths of the show. But anyway, go ahead, Gene. What do you think about all that?
No, I would like for Monica to finish up whatever y'all were covering right before the break. And I know as bad as it is here, I've talked to a lot of my friends in Canada, and they just wring their hands and are in disgust at what the Canadian government is doing to the people up there on this mask mandate, and they won't let people travel out of the country. And if they do travel out of the country or come down to the States, it's almost impossible for them to get back to their home in Canada. And that's so ridiculous. So she and Monica is a much better expert on this than I am, so I'd let her take whatever time she needs to finish up what y'all were discussing before the break and add any more information that she needs to on the situation in Canada.
Thanks, Gene. I don't want to take up too much time at all because I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say. But there are a couple of things. One thing I realize I said earlier, and I think it might have been misunderstood to mean something different. I was talking about cashless, but I actually don't mean cashless as in don't use cash for your transactions. We should all be using cash and not our plastic cards. But when I was talking about solutions in terms of you know, dealing locally and exchanging goods and services. What I was meaning to say is that we try to do things that are without money being exchanged as much as possible, or just using your cash locally and actual cash, not the plastic and credit and all that stuff. Because that's what they want. They want, our enemy wants us to be cashless, but without any means to be able to buy or sell our goods unless we get chipped or jabbed or whatever, this kind of thing. So I hope that that is understood, what I was talking about with that. And as far as Canada goes, yeah, it's completely communist. I mean, that really is what is happening. And they are trying hard to get these vaccination passports, and I put that in quotation marks because this is not a vaccination, but they want everybody to have this card. They've changed the name of it a few times. They've put it out there that they want this card to replace all other cards like driver's license, health card, or whatever. Now, if they go in that direction, oh my goodness, like that's a total control over people. This is why we absolutely have to resist this, do massive non-compliance, and we defend ourselves, we keep our guns and all those things. And I don't want to take up more time with any of this unless you have specific questions, but I think that you should tell your story and what you're going to talk about, and maybe I'll have questions for you.
Yes, ma'am. What we did, and this has been in the planning stage for, I guess, at least 2 years, of getting the bodies of Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest and his wife, Marianne Montgomery Forrest, out of Memphis, out of Forest Park, and brought back to private property. They were buried at Forest Park in 1901. And they were reinterred from the private cemetery there in Memphis and brought out there. And at that time, in the early 1900s, Forest Park was on the suburbs of Memphis, and it was in a nice part of town. And they thought that this would be a great tribute to one of the South's greatest military heroes to have him and his wife buried there, and then build a platform, sort of an upright granite pedestal there, and then put this beautiful, beautiful equestrian statue up over the top of it. And a lot of art critics say that's one of the finest equestrian statues anywhere in the world. Just the proportion of it and the size and the way the horse has its head held and the way he has, the way he's sitting astride this horse. And it really is beautiful. But then, of course, Memphis changed, like so many of our cities have. And it went into, you know, sort of an unlivable jungle. And the mayor and the city council caved in to the pressure from the lower primates that took over the city and wanted to get it removed. It was constantly being vandalized and spray painted. And so the Sons of Confederate Veterans Camp out down there in Memphis would have to go out about every 3 or 4 months and clean the graffiti off of it. And then they cooked up a deal to have it, the park, sold to a private entity. And then the private group said they wanted it removed and brought a crane over from Arkansas. They couldn't get anybody in Tennessee to do it, so they had to go over to Arkansas to get somebody and brought them over there to have the statue removed, and some of it was damaged. And so they actually broke 5 felony laws, and the Forrest family and our lawyer filed suit against the mayor and the city council, and they were looking at jail time. And, The district attorney in Memphis wouldn't file charges against them, and our state district attorney wouldn't file any charges against them, and our crooked governor, Governor Has-Been back then, Haslam, wouldn't do anything about it. In fact, he actually told the highway patrol to stand down and not go down there to Memphis the night they were taking this down, because he's going to make a lot of money off selling this land to the University of Tennessee Medical Center. And they renamed the park from Forest Park. It's Medical Center Park now, if you're looking for it. So anyway, all that was going on and through the case in the courts and everything. And then about the time we were finally cut a deal with these people for them to avoid jail time, then the corona beer virus hit. And of course, the state government shut down everything, which is just another excuse for them to not do anything, which they never do much anyway. And so that drug on, And finally, they got the judge to sign off, and you have to have a judge sign off on opening a grave and removing bodies from a grave. And they got that signed off. And then the statue, the equestrian statue, we got pretty early on, and it was hidden at a warehouse in Columbia, Tennessee, so we could put it back over the graves when we finally got the bodies exhumed and brought up here. And so that took place this summer. The graves were open. They had a professional mortician, of course, to do that. It wasn't a bunch of people going in there with a backhoe and just tearing the ground up, seeing what they could find. They were put in temporary caskets at a funeral home down in northern Mississippi. And then on the 15th of September, on Wednesday, the caskets, it was supposed to be on the 15th of September on Wednesday. They were going to be brought to the forest home. And then some of the people on the upper echelon of the Sons of Confederate Veterans got nervous, and they were afraid we didn't have enough security out there at the forest home to have them there overnight. Well, they didn't know what we had out there. First of all, we had about 18 or 20 cavalry reenactors. They were all armed. We had another 10 or 15 infantry reenactors. They were all armed. And then we had probably 8 to 10 mechanized cavalry or motorcycle riders, and they were definitely armed. And so were the rest of us that were out there. I would just, in a guess, say there was probably close to 1,000 rounds of ammunition out there if we needed it. We didn't have to use it, but we were ready on standby. And plus, we had hired a private security company, and they were going to be there overnight. So Wednesday was postponed, and we'll tell you what happened on Thursday.
Hold on to that thought, Gene. People will be right back, and Gene is going to fill us in on what all happened up there with the General Nathan Bedford Forestry Internment. Be right back.
Hello, friends. This is Jacob from Blood River Radio. We call the kings into account and tell the truth to shame the devil on this show every week because we are of the firm conviction that our cause cannot succeed without true revival amongst the remnant, amongst that principled minority of the dispossessed majority. Now is the time to stand and be counted, to do like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would not bow down to the false idols of their day, even under pain of death, like the 300 mighty men of valor who surrounded the Midianites with Gideon, or the 7,000 men that God told the prophet Elijah had not bowed their knees to Baal in a time when even calling fire down from heaven would not awaken our kinsmen from their slumber. If you are encouraged by our labors in the trenches for the kingdom and the cause of truth, liberty, and righteousness, I urge you to consider supporting this program. No donation is too small. We can do with thousands or even hundreds what our enemies and the powers and the principalities of this present darkness need tens of millions to do. So please donate today at BloodRiverRadio.com and help us take up the hedge and stand in the gap against the great evils of our time.
This is Attorney Jason Ruff, General Counsel of the Knights Party based out of Harrison, Arkansas, and proud supporter of Blood River Radio. I, like you, am concerned about the destruction of our beloved America and our racial kindred people and our cherished liberties. As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important. It is what allows us to be independent, and if properly used, liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of life. And with that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country, and personal liberty is looked upon as a crowning achievement of the people. However, Christianity and white law and order is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more by listening to Blood River Radio every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
Being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, I'm going to hush up. We're going to go right back to Gene, who is the expert on anything to do with Lincoln's War, anything to do with the Confederate generals. He knows pretty much it all. So go ahead, Gene. Keep on telling us about
it. No, I wouldn't say that, Ed. I know enough to get myself in trouble probably, but that's about it. So anyway, we were talking about what was happening about bringing the casket of General Nathan Bedford Forrest and his wife, Mary Ann, back to the Forrest boyhood home in Chapel Hill, Tennessee. And we'd even, much earlier than all of this, we even made an offer to have him reburied there. And that was turned down probably correctly, I guess, because of security reasons. And they wanted to have him and his wife buried over there where the Sons of Confederate Veterans headquarters is located in the new Confederate Museum, and just use the same security company to cover all three of the items there. The antebellum home that's there that we were using as a headquarters at Elm Springs, the new museum, and the forest grave sites, and just have all that covered in one area. So I would assume that would probably be more practical. Anyway, so they were supposed to be there Wednesday night, decided against that, and they brought them up to the forest home about 9 o'clock on Thursday morning the 16th. And this is really impressive. The hearse came in the driveway off the road, and the house is about a half a mile from the driveway or from the main road up the driveway to the house. So waiting for them when they pulled off the road were these 20 mounted Confederate cavalry soldiers, reenactors. And they had been practicing, and they know how to do all the turns and go from a line to a column. And they had a bugler there that would give the bugle commands, and they would form a line, columns of twos. And they led the two hearses up the driveway to the home. And then they peeled off to the side. They had a picket line set up and tied off their horses and got up and lined the driveway. And then on the other side of the driveway, they had the infantry there. And so what they did, they stopped the two hearses about 50 yards from the house. And they had three of these portable gurneys that they used lined up the driveway between the hearse and the house. So the first six would take a coffin off and carry it about 10 yards and set it on the gurney. And then another six would pick it up and carry it about 10 yards and set it on the second gurney. And then another six would take it about another 10 or 15 yards and place it on the last gurney. And then six more people would carry it into the house where it was going to be, where the two caskets were going to be set up for public viewing. So quite a few people were able to say, yes, I carried the coffin of General Nathan Bedford Forrest and his wife up the driveway to the Forrest home. And Eddie, I'll confess to you, I would not have been able to have done an interview when I saw that casket of General Forrest coming up the driveway. It was so emotional. And I thought about all the times I'd worked out there and how many times I've been stung by the wasp, how many times I've been bitten by a spider, how many times I've been cut with a tree limb, poked in the eye with a tree limb. We were cutting a tree and a limb flipped back and poked me in the eye and knocked my contact out. That contact went to hell or Texas. I don't know what happened to it. But anyway, all the things that had happened, and there in front of me coming up the driveway was the casket containing the body of one of America's greatest military heroes and the South's greatest military hero. And I was so fortunate and so blessed to be able to hold on to one of the railings there on the casket and carry it the last 30 or 40 yards past the rock wall, up the sidewalk, and up the steps. And then we had to hand it off and give it to six more people inside because the casket just barely fit through the door. So somebody standing on either side couldn't go through. So, you know, the first two would hand it to the first two inside, and then they'd drop off, and then three and four would hand it to three and four on the inside, just kind of passed it in. They got it set. And once they did that, then they allowed everybody that had come out that day to go through there, walk through the house, and pay their respects. And it was just a great, great, great event. After people went through, they were sitting out in the side yard under the trees. We had a lot of benches and chairs set up, and people were just visiting and, you know, enjoying everyone's company. There were no problems. We were way, way, way over prepared for Antifa or the BLMs or the, you know, some of the idiots to show up. We had none of them to come out there. I think they probably knew that way out in the country was not a place where you wanted to start something. They get real brave in these cities, but out in the countryside, that's really not the kind of people you want to mess with out there. And we were kind of laughing about it and said, yeah, we have 58 acres out here. Most of it's in the woods, and there are a lot of big sinkholes back there. We could take a few of them back there in those sinkholes, and the coyotes and the buzzards would finish up, and there in 24 hours, there'd be nothing left. So that would be taken care of. But thankfully, we didn't have any problems with any of them. And as I understand, I wasn't able to go over for the burial service. We had so many things that were left out, like benches and tents and trash cans and all of that. And I thought, well, they've got it lined up for the people. They want to be the pallbearers over there, and I will just let them take care of that at the Sons of Confederate Veterans headquarters. They've got that all set. And I was pretty much exhausted from 2 or 3 weeks of working trying to get all this set up at the Forest home. So I said, well, I'll just let them take care of that, and we'll start on packing away everything, cleaning up everything here on Friday. And then Saturday, still trying to get everything cleaned up and put away and stored. But as I understand it, they didn't have any problems over there with any protesters or people trying to, you know, make a violent scene or something like that. They did have some problems with the weather. They had a huge monsoon storm that hit right before the burial ceremony. But about 15 minutes before 10 o'clock, when it was supposed to start, the rain stopped. The clouds broke and beautiful sunshine, and it's like almost like they had it planned, you know, to flip the switch to turn off the sprinkler system and then turn the spotlights back on. So that part of it went very well for the burial ceremony. So it was a privilege, really, to be involved in something like that, and I was very thankful that I was able to do that. And I thought about that after it was all said and done, and the people were coming through viewing the caskets and you know, kind of like visitation that you'd have at a funeral home. And I thought, you know, you whine about, you know, getting tired out here and getting sunburned and all the other things you've gone through for 20 something years, but it was all worth it, because when you were carrying that casket, you were less than a foot away from Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest. And all of the hot, sweaty days in the summer and the cold, rainy, freezing days in the winter, that's all worth it. You know, whatever happened is minor. And you look back at what he had to go through during 4 years of war, and I don't have any room to complain, nothing at all. Because in the afternoon or in the evening, I get to go home, and it's an air-conditioned house in the summer, and it's a heated house in the wintertime. I don't have to sleep out on the ground in the wintertime. So, It really was. It was a great day. I was glad to see all the people visiting with each other. It's kind of almost like a family reunion, and we knew so many people that were there. And we had taken some security precautions to try to register people ahead of time, and that wasn't working all that well. And we knew there were a lot of people that weren't in the Sons of Confederate Veterans that wouldn't be able to come. We didn't want to slam the door in their face, so one of the fellows that's head of the Sons of Confederate Veterans camp there in Chapel Hill and I, we just printed up a lot of tickets and signed them with our signature and then gave them out to people that we knew were very pro-Southern and wanted to come and wanted to be there. And then after they got the caskets in place, I went back down to the front gate. And most of the people coming through the front gate, I knew. We didn't even check them for ID or their online registration or tickets or anything. I just saw them coming and knew who they were, and we just waved them on through. So we really didn't have any problems with our security or any protesters or anything out there like that. So that was a lucky break. And on Thursday, it was a hot day, but it wasn't raining. So we had until right toward the end of the day. So we were very lucky on the weather. That turned out well. So I guess that's about it. I don't know if y'all have any questions about anything that went on out there. I'd be glad to answer them for you, or at least try to.
So, what a beautiful story. Just a really moving story. And you're talking about that you didn't have any problems, which is great. What was the publicity like? Do you think that a lot of these people who would have interfered, let's say, would they have known what was going on?
They could have. A lot of this was online. The registration was online. It was online through the Sons of Confederate Veterans website. But we didn't advertise it with the fake news media. And I'll get back to that just after our break.
Thank you
so much, Jean. Thank you, Michael. People, I don't have to tell you what you've been listening to. We'll come right back to it in just a minute. And Ms. Michaels has questions, and I have a comment or two. Be right back.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News.
I'm Brad Bernards. A new roadblock could put New York City's vaccine mandate for schools in jeopardy as it closes in on Monday's deadline. A federal appeals court has temporarily delayed the city from implementing its vaccine requirement for public school employees. Mayor Bill de Blasio says they are prepared to go through with the mandate as hundreds of teachers refuse to be vaccinated.
We had to recruit a huge number of new teachers. We did that. They're overwhelmingly vaccinated themselves. They're available. They're ready.
A hearing is now set for Wednesday at 10 a.m. The temporary block remains in effect pending the outcome of the hearing. The Texas border crossing where thousands of Haitian migrants converged in recent weeks will be partially reopened late Saturday afternoon, U.S. Customs and Border Protection said. Federal and local officials said no migrants remained at the makeshift encampment as of Friday. This is USA Radio News.
Rockstar Radio is looking for a co-host. Yes, you heard me correctly. Nationally syndicated radio show and popular podcast, Rockstar Radio with Billy Gerard, is looking for a co-host. In fact, two segment co-hosts. One will join Billy weekly talking about all things financial, and another for a weekly review of the national real estate and mortgage market. Co-hosting with Billy Gerard could be the move that puts your career into overdrive. For all the details and to schedule an audition with Billy, send an email to bill@rockstar.today. That's bill@rockstar.today. Or go to rockstar.today/co-host for all the details. Rockstar Radio is looking for two expert co-hosts. It could be you. Email bill@rockstar.today or go to rockstar.today/co-host. Being on the radio with Billy will make you the expert in the field. It could take your career over the moon. Get all the audition details at rockstar.today/co-host.
Gabby's funeral. Here's USA Radio's Chris Barnes with details.
A late afternoon funeral on New York's Long Island is planned for Gabrielle Petito, her father announcing that on Saturday, saying that public visitation would precede the funeral at a funeral home in Holbrook. Mr. Petito also urging those who might have wanted to send flowers in Gabrielle's memory to instead consider making a donation to the Gabby Petito Foundation, which is something the family is still in the process of setting up. From our New England Bureau for USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Intel Corporation on Friday broke ground on two new factories in Arizona as part of its turnaround plan to become a major manufacturer of chips for outside customers. The $20 billion plants, dubbed Fab 52 and Fab 62, will bring the total number of Intel factories at its campus in Chandler, Arizona, to six. This is USA Radio News.
Well, people, thank you so much for holding on. I'm going to make a quick comment. What Gene said, that's got to be one of the most emotional stories I've ever heard. And people, Gene is, he is so the opposite of egotistical. Don't kid yourself. That man has put in thousands of hours over 20 years or more taking care of our quite Christian Southern cultural heritage. Actually, Nathan Bedford Forrest fought for every white person in the whole world. But that man, you people listening to this show, we all owe Gene Andrews a great debt for that. And I know he's very humble, but that is true. Everything he said, I mean, he's driven tractors, he burnt brush, you name it. You're looking at the man that's done the nuts and the bolts of keeping that alive. And you know what? When me and Gene are gone, I'm hoping somebody comes along that can take up the torch so our young people can see the great heritage we have. It would take 12 hours to talk about what the general did, but it's just incredible. He gave up I won't even try to get into it, but he gave up his own wealth. He sacrificed everything for a cause he believed in. And I'm just going to say congratulations, Gene. It's an honor and a privilege to be even – it's an honor to me. I'm flattered for my name to be even spoken in the same breath with yours. You're a giant.
No, we've had a lot of people work out there. I haven't done all that. We've had a lot of skilled help. I couldn't do the skilled work. The people that did the restoration work on the house and – rebuilt the railing on the porch and reconstructed a lot of the rock walls around there and everything. So it wasn't just one person fiddling around out there. We've had a lot of help. I'm very thankful for that, for all the help we've gotten. And we get a lot of help every year when we have that homecoming event. That's something that no one person can put on. So we get a lot of people out there working together. And the reason is these people are proud of their Southern heritage, and they're so disgusted with what they see on television and the lies and the misinformation and the slander that's thrown at us by these communist atheists. And I think that's one reason they hate us, because they're atheists and they hate Christians. And so they're trying to do everything they can to destroy us and our race and Christianity. And so I think a lot of them feel like if they go out there and work and give up time on their weekend or a weekday when they're retired or something like that, they're striking a blow for our race of people and our Southern heritage and our Christian heritage against the atheists, against the communists, against the New World Order, or the one world government, or whatever this conglomeration is that seems to be running the governments of all of these countries, whether it's the United States or Canada or Australia or the UK or whatever it is, and has certainly taken over in Germany and has them by the throat and makes them toe the line. So I think there are a lot of people that feel like this is a way they can get back. They'll never have a voice in Washington. The people they elect that are supposedly conservatives run as conservatives, and then as soon as they get elected, they turn around and they're just as bad as the other side is, as far as liberal cowards that won't defend our heritage. And so they can't do anything about that. So I really believe that coming out there and working gives them an opportunity to say, well, this is one thing I can do. I'm throwing down the gauntlet and saying, we're working here. This is private property. I work here, and my work that I do and time that I put in or money that I donate is going to be appreciated. It's going to be used the right way. And this is my one small shot that I can fire from my individual weapon back at the enemy. I do have one funny thing to tell you about that happened. We had about four individuals down on the front gate to check people coming in. We had a police officer there from Cornersville, chief of police. We had some of our private security around. We had two in uniform and two plain clothes just in case. So we were meeting down there early, about 7 o'clock on Thursday morning, and just kind of going over everything and where are you going to be and where are you going to be, and checking the radio. So if we had to call somebody to, we need help down front or we need help up at the house, we can take care of that. You know that, Eddie, from the military. You always do a radio check before you go out. And so they got it through with everything. I said, now I've got one more thing I want to say. And I pulled out a $20 bill and dropped it down on the table. And I said, I'm paying to be the one to tell the local news media or CNN or NBC or ABC or anybody that shows up, I want to be the one to tell them they're not coming on this property. This is a private event. It's private invitation. You can film whatever you want to out on the road, but you're not coming on this property. But I never got to do that. They never showed up. So, but I was ready. I said I'll pay for the opportunity to tell the news media to take it and shove it. Don't come on this property, because we'll have you arrested if you do. But none of the locals or none of the national news came out there. Although we did have an individual that was hired by the Sons of Confederate Veterans to video all of this or film all of this. And they are putting together a DVD eventually that will be available for sale of all of this. And they filmed a lot of the opening of the graves down in Memphis. They were out there early on Thursday morning. And then, of course, they went over to Elm Springs over there and filmed over there. And then the burial ceremony on Saturday. So I don't know when it's going to be ready to go. I'm saying probably, you know, about $20 for a DVD or maybe a double set, something like that. But that will be available. And people that weren't able to come will be able to see all of this and see what all went on, because they were right there beside the driveway when we were individually carrying the caskets up the driveway and into the house. So it's going to be right there on the spot, and people can see what all it was like and see what the forest home looked like and where they place the caskets inside, all of that sort of thing. So it will be available if you weren't able to come, and you could take a look and see what happened. I think it was a very proud day for Southerners that we had something. One of our heroes was being brought back home, had been rescued from the atheist enemies that we have, the communists that have basically taken over our cities, and the low type of characters and low individuals that are running our cities and inhabit our cities and turned them into basically unlivable hell holes. And we were able to rescue one of our great Southern heroes, get him out of there, give him a reburial with a lot of dignity and a lot of ceremony that he deserved. And now he's on private property, will be protected, and we don't have to worry about the whims of government blowing from the right off the chart somewhere way over on the left and pandering to these low IQ criminals that we have to deal with in so many of these cities. So I think it was a good day, a good situation to have, and very honored to just be a small part of that and be one of the pallbearers for the casket of our great Southern military hero. And that's something will stick with me the rest of my life, that I can remember that. And whatever else happens, if I fall off the roof again, so what? We're all going to die sooner or later anyway. So what? Yes. What happens? What happens, happens. So
one quick comment and question, and then I've got my sure Monica's got a lot of questions. Sure. But Gene, probably looking back when Lincoln invaded the sovereign nation of the Confederacy, that's probably in the early stages. You mentioned the New World Order. I would say that Lincoln and that gravel he put together, that satanic government he was under control, that was probably a beginning, early stages of the New World Order, because the South, General Lee, General Forrest, they were really fighting against the New World Order. We didn't realize that.
Back then, but they knew exactly what it was. And Robert E. Lee was a prophet, and we've used that on Blood River Radio as one of our advertisements, that Lee said, if those people, referring to this dictatorial government, federal government, he said, if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home. And it's come to pass.
It was like he was into the future. It's like he took a magic carpet ride into the future. I have one more question, and then we'll go to Monica. When will that's the homecoming in June every year, isn't it, Gene?
Yes, sir. We have that always the third Saturday in June, and in 2022 it'll be the 18th of June. And we have that on the grounds of the Forest Home, and it's just sort of like a big family reunion. We have musical guests that perform. We have historical speakers. We have the reenactors firing cannons and cavalry demonstrations and infantry demonstrations. And then we have sutlers set up all around the grounds that sell books and flags and homemade soap and just all sorts of items. So it goes from 9 in the morning till about 3:30 or 4 in the afternoon. And so it's like a big Southern family reunion, because we have people coming from East Tennessee, Alabama, Kentucky, and all over.
Well, we're getting ready to go to our final break, Gene and Miss Monica. When we come back, we'll turn it over to Miss Monica, because I'm sure she has a lot of questions. We could do 12 hours of this and never even scratch the surface. People, hang on to your seats. Be right back.
During our war for Southern independence, the brilliant Confederate general Robert E. Lee foretold the decline of this country when he prophesied, if those people, referring to the dictatorial federal government, if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home. As Lee predicted, it has come to pass. The principles laid out in our founding documents, our Declaration of Independence, and the individual rights protected in our Constitution have been vilified and discarded. But not everyone has surrendered. Blood River Radio brings you highly respected, intelligent guests not afraid to speak the truth when the truth in America today is censored and attacked. Your contributions keep us on the air in order to fight against the bullies abroad and the tyrants at home. Send your war contributions to Blood River Radio, P.O. Box 34636, Bartlett, Tennessee 38184.
That address is on our website, www.bloodriverradio.com. Don't let the bullies and the tyrants win.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church. A congregation of God's covenant people, informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ has been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these. This means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
Well, God bless you, people. You know, it's just such an emotional thing. Like I was telling Gene and Monica during the break, we could do 12 hours on this and not even scratch the surface of the questions I could have in the comments. But listen, we're going to Miss Monica. I'm sure Miss Monica will have plenty of comments and questions about what Gene has been. But Gene is a national treasure. I don't care what he says. He greatly underplays his role in what he's done. And God bless him. What a wonderful man. I'm just blessed to him be in his presence. And anyway, Miss Monica, go ahead and ask Gene any questions you have or make any comments.
Well, thanks for that. This has been such an inspiring and moving story. And actually, Gene, you did prove Eddie right in that when he was commenting about your modesty and humility, because even in complimenting your role and all of this, you immediately talked about all the other people who have been working so hard, which is wonderful, and it shows great strength to do that. So I just want to mention that strength and integrity, and that's wonderful. I just, something you said off air in the break made me very curious. You were talking about multiple burials. Now, you were talking about General Forrest, were you? Could you?
Yes. He died in 1877, and he was buried at a private cemetery there in Memphis. And Eddie, you correct me on this. I think it was Hollywood Cemetery or Elmwood, and I keep getting the names mixed up. But anyway, so it was a private cemetery. Yeah.
Oh, I was been told that it was Elmwood. Elmwood, matter of fact, Elmwood, Gene, here in Memphis.
Okay.
They have there's more Confederate generals buried in Elmwood Cemetery than any cemetery in the world except Richmond, Virginia.
In Richmond.
That's what I've been told.
So he was buried there in 1877. And then the city of Memphis wanted to honor him, and so they exhumed his body and his wife's body and moved them out to, and she died, I think, 1893. And so then they reburied them out at Forest Park, which at that time was on the suburbs of Memphis, and they created a beautiful park there, and it was a place for people to come and relax under these big shade trees and pay respect to one of the real heroes of Memphis and Tennessee and all of the South, and at that time was held up as a national hero as well. So that was in 1901, and then he was, of course, Memphis changed and the politics changed, and everything in this country has changed for the worse, and they had to get the bodies out of there and bring them out of Memphis and get them on private property and where they could be protected. And I was telling Eddie during the break, one of my so-called friends was recounting this and said, yes, he was first buried in 1877, and then the bodies were moved in 1901, and then in 2021 they were buried again. They had three burials for General Forrest. And Gene was there for all three of them. He was that old. Well, thanks a lot. Yeah, I really appreciate that. And they said, "And which one did you think was the most impressive? Since you saw all three of them, which one was the most impressive?" So you can always count on your friends to take up for you anytime. They'll step up like that. So,
oh, that's great. Something
so,
that
yes, there were actually Miss Monica, like you said, there were actually three burials when he died. When he died, he was only 56 years old, in which even back then that was not that old. You know, there were people living into their 80s and 90s, but he had gone through so much during the war, and being shot five times doesn't really help your health a whole lot. And they were two bullets that were left in him. They were so close to his spine that the surgeons were afraid if they tried to take him out, it would either kill him or paralyze him. And so he carried those the rest of his life. And
Wow.
You went through like that caused, I'm surely, an early death. And he was diabetic, and they said that when he was a big man for back then, 6'2", and weighed right at 200 pounds, very muscular. He worked hard all his life, so he didn't have to join a gym or a health club or anything. He got plenty of workout. And so he was a big man, but when he died, his body had wasted away, and he weighed less than 100 pounds. So he was really in extremely bad health right there at the end. And that finally finished him off, and probably lead poisoning and being diabetic and all of the combination, all of the above, certainly did him in. So, yes, that is the third, and we hope the final burial for General Forrest and his wife. I hope that never comes to a situation where the government can actually come on private property and destroy monuments and desecrate grave sites on private property. And I say I hope it'll never happen. I will never say anymore that it won't happen, because the Robert E. Lee statue that they just tore down and cut up in Richmond, when that was given to the state of Richmond, state of Virginia, the agreement was made that the state of Virginia would take care of that site on Monument Avenue, and that beautiful equestrian statue and that huge base for that monument, that's probably almost two stories tall, just the base itself, and that the state of Virginia was supposed to take care of that permanently, in perpetuity. And that was written into the agreement that the state of Virginia signed off on to take that monument. And, of course, we have a rotten-to-the-core governor there, and he reneged on that, backed out on that. And then the legal system is totally corrupt in this country, because the judge they went to appeal this movement of that statue said, well, that's what it said then, but that's really not what it means, you know, perpetuity or forever or into infinity or whatever. It really didn't mean that now. You know, we have to reinterpret that now. So the legal system is garbage that we have in this country. Politicians are garbage that we have in this country. So there is no law and order, except, you know, whoever has the guns and the police and the FBI, the fumbling bureaucratic institute or whatever that stands for, that can enforce their desire to break the law. They have the backup power to break the law whenever they want to, and we are just targets out there on the street. So don't ever think that the law is going to stand up and do the right thing, because the law is set up to do the wrong thing, or do the will of the government, or do the will of the New World Order or globalists or whatever they call themselves, for them to perpetuate whatever kind of criminal activity they want to do. So we hope that the general and his wife will lay in peace for as many years as possible, but don't bet that the government won't figure out some way to come on private property and destroy that somewhere down the road. Until we have the second war for Southern independence and throw the bums out, get them out of the South. And, you know, the way Sleepy Joe's going, their empire may collapse, and we won't have to go to war against them. It'll just, like the Roman Empire or the Egyptians or the Byzantines or all of these other empires that failed, maybe they will too. They'll be next on the list to go down the drain.
Yeah, so there's always a common element in all of these failed empires, and that is the Jew who has infiltrated and brought about their destructive.
Yes, yeah,
tactics. And you're absolutely right that there's no actual justice system, well, it's completely corrupted because they are...
Well, you found that out. I'm not telling you anything that you don't know. Good night. What they put you through over in Germany. Good night. That's
well, they're
horrible.
They're defending that big criminal gang called the government. So that's what they're doing. But something that you talked about in telling your story is the pride in our heritage. And I just want to emphasize the importance of that. And that's the other part of the equation in this war that we're in, is that we reteach or relearn our pride in our heritage, which means we need to know about our heritage, which of course the public fools system or public school system, they have done a really good job of erasing our history. And of course the books that are put out by the mainstream and all the whole mainstream, you know, media system is putting out lies and erasing our history and replacing the actual facts with fiction. And so this is a really important part in the story, is that we relearn our true history and take pride in our heritage. And so this event that you've told us about today is just absolutely monumental. It's inspiring. It's beautiful. It just is fantastic. And so I would just like to say thank you on behalf of our race, our people, everybody, for what you have done and your role in all of this.
Well, thank you very much. Coming from you and the struggles that you've had and what you've had to go through, that is certainly a wonderful, wonderful compliment, and I appreciate that. And I hope we have done a little something to inspire our people to stand up and say, you know, I'm not listening to what they tell us on TV or what the lies they put in the papers or in the magazines or whatever. These people that put this event on are showing us why we have a reason to be proud of our history. And they can lie to us all they want to, but the truth will come out. And President Jefferson Davis, after the surrender of all the Confederate armies, he said, "The cause for which we contended will reassert itself, although it may be at another time and in another form." So there is a possibility that we could eventually get our country back and have our history and heritage protected and be able to live in a free society that reverts back to the original concept of the Constitution. And that's one thing I can't stomach some of these so-called conservative commentators on TV, on television, that are conservative on so many issues, and then they turn right around and worship Lincoln. And I say, Lincoln was the antithesis of conservatism. He didn't save the Union. He destroyed it. He destroyed our Constitution and our country of sovereign states and replaced it with this socialist dictatorship. And it's been spiraling downhill ever since. So these people need to study their history a little bit and see what we had prior to 1861 and what has happened to us since the surrender of the Confederate government in 1865 and where we have gone. Because the things that these so-called conservatives are whining about on Fox News or other so-called conservative networks and conservative talk shows, it started with Lincoln. And that was the end of our constitutional republic. And it's I don't know that we will never get it back with the United States all together as 50 states. We are going to have to separate away and get away from that in the Southeast, or maybe the plain states up through the middle. So, Eddie, Monica, thank y'all so very much for letting me be on the program with you. It's been an honor.
Thank you. Thank you, Gene. Thank you, Miss Monica. I would like to reiterate what Gene said. Join the League of the South. That's what the League of the South is working for, what Gene just said. Miss Monica, thank you so much for coming on tonight. And thank you, Gene. Thank you, Cameron, the guy who made this show run. Thank all of our beloved audience. God bless you. Tune in the same time, same place next week. It'll be October the 2nd, it looks like. So, good night, everyone.